Thank you, Susan. My job today is just to provide a very brief but and general overview of this notion of social justice. So about 25 years ago, Robert Bella and a team of sociologists and anthropologists at Berkeley went out and they went around the country to kind of do a follow-up of some of the work de Tocqueville had done to find out what motivates Americans, how are they connected with each other, how do they think about the country. And he found many things, but for today's purposes, he found two things that were really interesting. Number one, and not to anybody's surprise, he found that the first language of American society, the way that people talk about things, talk about themselves, talk about the country, was the language of individualism, rugged individualism. The second thing he found was that while that was America's first language, there is a second language, a language that was equally rooted in values, deep values, but that was seldom articulated in relation to rugged individualism, and that was the language of community, of interconnectedness and mutual dependency. This second language of America, the language of community, is the first language of public health. And that is also the language of social justice that I'm going to try and touch on today. This is probably a quote that is the most frequent quote used at the American Public Health Association meetings. But for those who aren't familiar, Rudolf Virchow was the father of social medicine, one of the initial people in terms of developing the field of cellular pathology. And he went to investigate Council of Berlin, he went to investigate a typhus outbreak in Upper Silesia in 1847, 1848. And he came back and he said, you know, the problem here is not the epidemic in itself, it's the conditions in which people live. And his famous quote was, medicine is a social science and politics is nothing but medicine on a grand scale. And what that really means, it's actually a little bit of a cryptic kind of quote, but what that means is whatever we want it to mean. And what it means to me is that number one, problems are rooted in social conditions. And it's very important. Number two, you cannot adequately deal with public health problems unless you deal with those social conditions in which the problems are embedded. And number three, this is a political process. That yes, science informs, but science doesn't determine. And science is interpreted through these the political lens, and the political lens is deeply rooted in social values. So I don't know how many of you have seen this. Jared Bernstein is now Vice President Biden's senior economic advisor. Whoops. He is a social worker turned economist. He was at the Economic Policy Institute for a number of years. So Jared said, you know, the struggle in American society historically is the struggle between the yo-yos and the wits. The yo-yos are those who believe you're on your own. And the wits are those who believe we're in this together. By the way, you guys are mostly wits in this room. But the struggle is, how do we balance that in American society? And I'll give you an example of this. You know, before the last Congress wound down, there was this big debate, some of you may remember, and the debate was about, do we extend the unemployment benefits, and this is going to come up again, by the way, do we extend the unemployment benefits for those who have been unemployed for 99 weeks? And one argument was, you know, we don't want to do that because it will undermine their motivation to get work. That it will actually contribute to the problem rather than the solution. Because there's plenty of opportunity out there, people just need to work harder to find it. And the other side said, well, wait a minute, we don't believe there's enough opportunity, people are trying their best and we need to give them a helping hand. This is an example of how this plays out. And the reason that this is so important, because these are two dominant narratives in our society, and whichever political party controls the narrative, and it's never all one thing, of course you know that, but whichever political party controls the narrative, public policy follows. So from the late 70s, you know, up until just very recently, we were embedded in this yo-yo narrative. And public policies fell into place in terms of supporting that. And now we're coming off of that and moving toward more toward a we're in this together. Well, if you think about the values that underlie this, it fits well with the social justice and the market justice values. And I'm always indebted to Dan Beecham, who's a great colleague and mentor and now living in Arizona, who his classic paper, Public Health and Social Justice from 1976, is something that everybody ought to read. But if you look down and you think about the values of we're in this together versus you're on your own, the wits and the yo-yos, and you map them on this basis, what we're talking about from a social justice perspective is that there is a shared responsibility and we are all interconnected, that there is a strong obligation to the collective good. You cannot be healthy in an unhealthy environment, however broadly we define that environment. We have an obligation to the collective good to create an environment in which people can be successful, that basic benefits need to be assured, and finally, that government involvement is necessary. Now, I don't have time to go into all these in detail, but I'll just use the one example from basic benefits should be assured. Last year, I was in Denmark. You know, as you know, every Western industrialized country has agreed, they've come to agreement that universal access to affordable health care is something they want to do. We have not come to that agreement yet. They've agreed that that is a basic benefit. We have an agreement in this society that K through 12 education, that will be something that we provide to everybody. When there's a budget crisis, we don't say, oh, we've got to cut out the fifth grade this year. No fifth grade. Although in Oregon, we're getting close to doing that. But anyway, but there's no fifth grade. In Denmark, when I was there last year, K through PhD, free, if you're qualified, free education. We have not come to that agreement. So one of the struggles we have between social justice and market justice is what are the benefits that should be assured? Now, on the other side, the notion is you assure very few benefits. Because if you give people too many benefits that they haven't worked for and they haven't earned, they don't appreciate those benefits, they don't use them well. So on the other side, we're looking at self-determination, rugged individualism. Benefits need to be based solely on effort because there's a very strong moral basis on these benefits. This is one of the arguments with universal access to healthcare. If you give everybody access to healthcare that's easy for them to get and cheap or free, what will happen? They will use it. And they will use a lot of it, and they will use too much of it. And you know what? There's some truth to that. So it's not like this is crazy stuff. You know, we all live on the same planet. We're trying to balance these things. Here is a limited obligation to the collective good. We in this room, we extend our circle of compassion very broadly, our circle of involvement. On the other side, in terms of the yo-yos, it's much more narrow. There is a sense of obligation to collective good, but it's defined much more narrowly. Very important on the social, on the market justice yo-yo side is the notion that behavior is voluntary and moral. Therefore, the behavior has to have consequences. If it's good behavior, there has to be a reward. If it's bad behavior, you have to be punished for that in some way, either through the market or through the criminal justice system, because if you're not punished, what happens? You will continue to do the behavior. So experience becomes the best lesson. And finally, there's limited government intervention. When government gets involved, it just makes things worse rather than better. And there's lots to say about that. The other side of this government involvement is necessary is best summed up by Ron Sims, who was the executive for Seattle King County, but now is a deputy at HUD. And Ron's famous quote is, your zip code should not be your destiny. And because in this country we have so many people who cannot move, the social mobility has eroded over time, that you need government at a very basic level to remedy the inequality of starting positions so that there is equal access to opportunity. So your zip code should not be your destiny. So can everybody see what this is, the audience participation part? Everybody see what this says? What's it say? Very good. This is a very sharp audience. That's what it says, though. And the reason I do this is because this is an exercise in framing. And basically, I gave you a cue, which was I gave you the top of the letters. And you went from that cue and very logically put it together and said, oh, that says public health. This is the way framing works, and this is what happens in our society, is that there are cues, and I'm going to show you this in a minute, there are cues that activate whole worldviews just based on these cues in their particular words. So I'm not going to go into framing, but here's what's important for you to know is that frames trump facts. It's not that facts aren't important. It's that facts are necessary, but we think they're sufficient. They're not sufficient to create change. Everybody in this room believes that research can change the world. Well, it doesn't really work that way. So the first thing you have to understand is this notion of the facts will set you free is a nice idea, but it doesn't work that way. Okay, facts are necessary, but not sufficient. Thank you. The second thing is the data speak for themselves. Now, I know some of you are epidemiologists, and my epidemiologist friends say, well, if you torture the data long enough, you can get them to say anything you want them to say, but I don't know that that qualifies as speaking for themselves. But how many times have you come up with the, how many times have advocates come up with the ideal study, the study that shows without doubt that something is good? And then you go to your state legislature, you go to your policymakers, and there's somebody else there with the same study arguing exactly the opposite thing, because we're looking at this through a value lens. And we also have the idea the opposition doesn't make sense when the opposition actually has a very coherent, very thought-out moral argument that we tend to ignore and think it doesn't make sense because we can't respond to it, because we're using numbers in order to respond, and the numbers don't mean anything to them. So think about healthcare reform. Think about the blue box. Healthcare reform behind the blue box. Healthcare reform is a cue that I gave you. What does it mean? Well, to you it may mean social justice, helping people, providing people an opportunity to get treatment they need, taking care of the most vulnerable, all kinds of good things. But this is what it might mean to the opposition. And again, this makes sense. John Boehner, who is now going to be our Speaker of the House, this is what he said. This is when it was still a bill in November 09. He said, this bill, and remember, he's talking about a health care bill, this bill is the greatest threat to freedom. They're talking about freedom. They're not talking about numbers. That I have seen in the 19 years I've been here in Washington. It's going to lead to a government takeover of our healthcare system with tens of thousands. I don't want to offend anybody in this room. Some of you may be bureaucrats, but tens of thousands of new bureaucrats. And you know what? They're going to be right down the street making these decisions for you. What a horrible vision. I mean, is this going to make you run out of, I mean, what numbers do you use, by the way, to respond to this? Are there numbers that respond to this argument? This is basically a framing issue. So remember, there is no blank slate. There is no blank slate. When people deal with an issue, they are dealing with a whole history of frames that they've integrated and thought about. So the thing I wanted to let you know very quickly is from this one slide, George Lakoff never published this, but this is a very important idea. George's point is that level one is the idea of the level of big ideas, of universal values, justice, family, community, all these things. And you go down, forget about level two now, level three is the specific policies and programs. The We're In This Together people argue at level three, which is the specific policies and programs. The level one people argue about the values. The yo-yo people argue about the values. When you win at level one, level three is a foregone conclusion except at the margins. And we are locked into this sort of liberal rational perspective of the facts will set you free, the data will tell the story. As David Brooks reminds us, economic policies are about values. If your policies undermine personal responsibility, by separating the link between effort and reward, voters will punish you for it. And that's exactly what he wrote this before the election, but that's exactly what we saw during that last election. So in conclusion, we have to understand that the starting point of the discussion is not a blank slate, that people have pre-existing notions, oftentimes having very little to do with data, what we need to do is we need to establish common values. We need to look at the longer-term issues. We need to move from values to policy and program, not from policy and program to values, which is traditionally what we do. And we need to think in terms of these larger narratives that drive us over the long term rather than just election to election. So that's the briefest summary I can do of this stuff. Thank you very much. And now I want to introduce our next speaker, Michelle Sarchet. Michelle is with the Center for American Indian and Alaska Native Health at the University of Colorado Denver School of Public Health. The center's mission is to promote the health and well-being of American Indians and Alaska Natives. Michelle.